Thank you very much. Happy to be here this morning. I'm going to try to stay on schedule here. So the sub-theme here is The Wealth of Villages, which is a bit of a pretentious title for those of you who know Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, but it actually has a pretty close link to the talk that preceded this one in a way that I will try to point out. This is joint work with John Faulkner, who's a postdoc at Chicago. So the idea here is pretty simple and ambitious, which is to understand poverty as one of the precursors for terrorism. Doesn't have to happen, but can happen. To see the potential for uneven development, even within provinces and certainly within a country, that can make for this threat. The premise here is you need economic models to understand these underlying forces, and the models are going to have to be pretty sophisticated in some sense. They're going to have to deliver fine-tuned predictions at the village level, or otherwise we're not going to succeed with the goal. We want to assess with these models the impact of current policy that governments are adopting or potentially policy change. Let me say a few words about the data. I'm going to be showing you data from a village level census, a comprehensive census that Thailand did biannually. I'm going to focus today on four provinces where we've actually geo-positioned all those villages, and we hope to extend this, as I'll say later. The point is that two of the four are very near Bangkok, two are out in the northeast, so there's a deliberate contrast, and the extension will be and is being done in the south, where there is now, you know, a serious problem. We not only use these the village census socioeconomic data, but the satellite imagery and a number of other sources that I'll be showing you on the map. So here's a display. This is basically who's running small businesses. And you can see, you can see the area around Bangkok is very dark and two provinces there circled in red, whereas out in what they call the northeast, which is really more east than anything else, or these agrarian provinces. Yeah, this is actually displaying not only businesses, but the fractions of households with TVs, not because we're interested in TVs, rather because they're an indicator of wealth, as would be tractors, motorcycles, pickup trucks, and so on. So just note the very uneven pattern, we'll come back to the national level, but I want to focus in to the four provinces where we began the Thai surveys. These surveys are still ongoing, and we've extended them to the south. These little dots are villages, and they're color-coded by, again, this indicator of wealth, which is TVs. So way back in 1986, relatively few villages had a lot of households had TVs, but within 10 years, practically everyone had TVs, and that's not atypical of the spread of wealth, so to speak. Two areas near Bangkok, obviously, are wealthier than the two northeastern provinces, and you can study this. You'll begin to see patterns of concentration, you know, even within the provinces. Parts near Bangkok have forests, parts in the northeast, there's some urban areas and towns. This period, again, between 86 and 96, Thailand was growing faster than almost any other country in the world at 7 to 12%, and even post-financial crisis until the tsunami and oil prices was basically third or fourth, only next to India, China, and Vietnam. So it remains a very interesting country to study. This growth process literally transforms the landscape. Here you're seeing the satellite imagery. The green areas do represent what used to be trees. There's been extensive deforestation. This is a province relatively near Bangkok. The eastern part, you can see the reddish areas. Those are the infrastructure, roads, factories, towns, and so on. And actually, that's on a corridor that makes its way from Bangkok down to the eastern seaboard. As I said, a period of extensive change in the landscape and in the socioeconomic situation of households. I'm going to flip through sort of a hand-created simulation. We go from 86, 88. The dark areas here represent this index now of wealth. And you go 86, 88, 90, 92, 94, and so on. So it may appear by the end that everyone's wealthy. It's not quite true. It's just that this is on a common scale, and there's relative inequality and some poverty that remains in these provinces. In fact, in Sisaket, still something like 40% of the population are below the official poverty line, but they're close to the poverty line, and they'll flip back and forth depending on, you know, whether it's a good rainfall year or not. In the GIS, of course, we use whatever we can, including the roads, we can code them for road speed at a fairly fine level of accuracy. And this will be useful, as you'll see, in figuring out how near or far villagers and villages are from the infrastructure. We want to create, you know, measures of accessibility to infrastructure, with the reds obviously almost trivially here, close to the major intersections. Now, I can only say a few words, I think, about the economic models, but we're going to simulate them over time and compare what happens according to the model with what actually happened in the data, and that's an important subject of model specification and validation. These models, there's two of them, have to do with some of the key ingredients of what was going on during this growth period in Thailand. One, households going into business, transiting from rice farming into shrimp or even non-farm business. And the other has to do with access to financial infrastructure, whether or not they have a savings account in a bank, whether they borrow from a bank for agriculture. The way the occupation choice model works is that basically credit is not perfect. To a degree, some people have to do whatever they're going to do on their own. If their wealth is low initially, they can't do much, and they're pretty much stuck in subsistence level activities, but they may be saving, and over time wealth will accumulate. The lucky few, who are also talented, set up businesses and for a while make an enormous amount of profits, generating inequality, but they also hire labor, and eventually that mechanism dries up the wage so that even people who are not in business tend to benefit. So what I only want to leave you with is wealth is an obstacle, but wealth accumulation alleviates constraints. And we, you know, the models take a stand on how this, or the pathway, so to speak, how wealth creation, you know, makes its way through the population, but with uneven consequences. The financial infrastructure model doesn't take as given the observed path of the number of branches of banks and so on, but rather tries to explain that. And the idea is similar. There is a setup cost or a household cost for learning how to manage a little more sophisticated financial affairs, and it's costly, takes time and effort, or first approximation takes wealth to basically absorb the transactions cost. So initially, poor households won't be using the financial infrastructure. Eventually, they'll pass some threshold and they will use it. And we want to see how well that model predicts. So at the aggregate level, between 86 and 96, these are just time simulations of the number of people in the model and in the data going into business. I'll just say right away that there are several lines here. There are basically two or three model simulations and then the actual entrepreneurial simulation. The first simulation actually doesn't do bad over time, but it doesn't do well when you look at the map, and I'll show you that. So we corrected it to fine-tuned it to allow, with the GIS, the transactions cost to vary with distance. The second model, this is the financial deepening model. Again, at the aggregate level, doing surprisingly well in tracking the growth of wealth and the endogenous use of financial infrastructure. Here, though, back to the four provinces is a view by villages. We create space-filling polygons around each point so as to fill up the map and allow us more to the point, see something about what's going on in the individual villages. Could be a bit distorting. If there aren't very many villages in an area, you'll see a large area filled in, but it's the best we have going. So here you see the wealth index, and what I want, the reds are areas of concentration. So as promised, within a province, even today, there's a lot of areas that are high wealth and a lot of areas, the green areas, where low wealth villages are surrounded by other villages of low wealth. You can create these sort of agglomeration hotspots. This is a view of Buriram and Sisaket. Basically, North Sisaket is a lot more developed and more active than Southern Sisaket. And those yellows on the left there represent the center of agglomeration hotspots. So we use wealth, education, fraction of households in business, and other socioeconomic variables to figure out where the intense activity is. Even at this level, I think this is incredibly useful because you're seeing where the rich are, so to speak, and the poor, and over time, the development or change in the province. You know, terrorists live places. They come from certain villages and not other villages, and this is a necessary ingredient for thinking about the background. Back to model validation, we want to look at how well the models predict relative to the actual data for two reasons. Number one, it may be terrible, we'll throw the model out. Two, we may actually see the model does reasonably well, but figure out how to fine-tune it in a way that makes its prediction even better, and the occupation choice model is an example of that. Three, we may see wild anomalies, things that are really over-predicting relative, but it'll turn out there's an important lesson in that. It tells us, in one case, the financial deepening model tells us a lot about policy distortions and hence possible remedies. So it's of great importance. So this slide is just regressing the prediction errors, model prediction versus actuals against things like the distance to agglomeration centers. And on another slide, I have this with wealth and education. And there are three columns here because we have the original model and these spatially corrected models. Basically, we correct the model by keeping track of the distance. And the cost of going into business or getting ideas rises the further you are away from these agglomeration centers. That simple fix of the model allows us to generate prediction errors, which essentially have very, very little, they're random. There's no, except for Lopery, there's practically no spatial pattern. So this is a very big success. You know, after we understand the world through this model, we understand the geography and the patterns to the point that deviations are, you know, have no geographic basis. Or related to any of the other socioeconomic variables that we have. In fact, now that the model seems to be working well, we could ask what would happen if you created new roads. So we basically simulate the model by putting roads and intersections of roads into areas that previously were lacking them, and there is an enormous change in the numbers of people going into businesses. So this is a potential policy. Of course, we're just looking at the benefit side here, not the cost side, but it's something to put into the calculus. Now, in the financial deepening model, the model basically doesn't do terribly well, but there are very salient patterns. The model over-predicts, the model over-predicts for the educated, those near roads and the intersection of major highways, those with high wealth initially, over-predicts. In other words, something seems to be impeding the use of banks, not for poor people in remote areas, but for relatively well-to-do middle-class people. We even then pursued that further and looked at two of the main financial sector providers, as well as distance. So one is an agricultural bank. It targets farmers with credit, and it's a big part of Thailand's financial infrastructure. The second are commercial banks that, of course, typically exist in most countries. And again, space. So through the lens of the model, we asked what would be the transactions cost that would rationalize the data we actually see. And the transactions costs here are, first off, higher for commercial banks than for the bank for agriculture. That kind of makes sense if you think the bank for agriculture is getting a subsidy, and its mission, by the way, is to target credit. So maybe, you know, in the end, it turns out the model's telling us the costs are indeed lower. But for commercial banks, the costs are high. More troublesome, I think, is the fact that both for this bank for agriculture and commercial banks, the costs are higher near the main road. So in the end, to us, we're pretty certain we're uncovering a policy distortion. And so I've added a few pictures of the spread of the bank for agriculture and commercial banks over time. And you can see on the left here that the bank for agriculture starts in the Northeast with a relatively low number of branches, and but the population accessing the bank increases dramatically over these 10 years, almost surpasses the central province-rich areas. On the other hand, commercial banks have a much, you know, lower presence in the Northeast, and that presence stays low over time. And you can also look at systematically the expansion of the bank for agriculture and commercial banks. The bank for agriculture here basically is filling in holes. It doesn't just expand locally. But on the other hand, and I don't have the slides, commercial banks concentrate their lending. When they start lending in a new area, they lend to other people in that new area, leaving these big holes in the infrastructure, so to speak. And the point is, they leave a hole relative to what a sound economic model would predict that they ought to be doing. So we think that for political economy reasons, Thailand's financial system isn't working as well as it might. Now let me just finish with this last slide, back to the big picture. This is all of Thailand over these 10, 12 years or so. And it's the patterns of income and income change, with Bangkok leading the way, and then this sort of spine going up to the north. Again, because they're all on a common scale, it looks like everything's filled in. But if you looked, you really can't see it very well on this map. If you looked at the southern provinces right there on the tip, that's become an extremely problematic area. And I have other graphics that I could show you that, although the south has never done that badly overall relative to the rest of Thailand, those provinces, Yala, Satun, and Nawathiwet, have been lagging behind. So the sort of precursor for potential problems was growing, and not just in income and wealth, but also education, malnutrition, many, many indicators. I showed this at great length last year, and this year I decided to focus more on the models. But the idea then is to merge those two sets of activities. We'll use this database archive that we're creating, and take the models and try to understand better about the South. Fortunately, we have continued the surveys, and we've continued them in Satun, which is a southern Islamic province, and substantially Muslim. On the other hand, Yala, after our survey, the one survey we were able to do, the violence and terrorism got a lot worse, and it has not been safe, not safe for our enumerators. So, you know, with great pain, we've had to suspend survey operations. So I'm not going to have a panel, not until we start up again, but I think the goal here would be, if things do stabilize, to get back in there with collaboration with our partners and maybe try to make up the difference with some retrospective, and actually, when things settle down, maybe villagers would be more willing to talk about what happened in their village. I know that in one of our villages, the headman was murdered shortly after I visited there, and several of the adolescents in that village were part of the unfortunate events at the mosque, where about 100 young men were killed, but they were attacking a government facility. So that's, stay on time.